The other thing I want to say to some of these people, especially the ones who put it on email, is who the hell writes your email? You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Now, you know, my business is really about teaching people what to say.
Hello, Warners. Welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes sales sexy again. I'm Gina Tremarco, founder and sales trainer at Pivot 10 Results and Carolina Improv.
And I'm Rachel Pitts, mom, realtor, and creator of The Closing Curve. Gina, how's it hanging today?
It is hanging. I'm feeling good. I'm still in love with my webcam, by the way.
Your webcam. Okay. Our listeners obviously can't see you, but I know you can go to our Facebook page, Women Your Mother Warned You About on Facebook, and see Gina has a new webcam, which I recommended, which I actually have one of and I don't use, but it gives you a beautiful glow.
It does. I love it. I'm feeling good today. I'm excited about this episode. We just got finished interviewing Jerry Acuff. Wow. He's an entrepreneur, best-selling author, one of the top 15 sales experts worldwide. He comes from humble beginnings. He was an introverted who you would never guess he was an introvert, first of all. He's an introvert who struggled to graduate from college and was unsuccessful at his first two sales jobs. However, he eventually rose from sales rep to vice president and general manager of a $650 million company. He also went on to build Delta Point Inc., his multi-million dollar marketing and sales consulting company for the past 18 years, which we learn his wife was all of that, very instrumental in that, working with with 17 of the top 100 companies in the world. He's worked with organizations such as Merck, Johnson & Johnson, Novartis, ADP, and the Dallas Police Department, to name a few. And he's also the author of three books, The Relationship Edge in Business, The Relationship Edge, and Stop Acting Like a Seller and Start Thinking Like a Buyer.
Phew. Yeah. Well, one little thing about introverts and extroverts, you know, people sometimes get a little confused about what it really means. Like, I'm actually an introvert, and as is he, and a lot of really well-known performers. And the thing about it is,
as am I, by the way.
Right, exactly. And so it's not so much that we aren't open and we like speaking and performing and talking to people, but we gain our energy by being alone and getting some downtime. So I can understand, you know, he doesn't come across as an introvert, but I can see that about him. And he had such great tips, especially about the foundation of everything, and that is relationships. And not just building lots of relationships, but building relationships that are really strong and that go deep.
Yeah, I had so many takeaways. I was writing the whole time and like trying to keep track of the interview. I think one of the key things he said is your network is really important. Like we know that, but he really hit on like some key ideas. He gave a interesting suggestion about how to really stay in touch with people. Do you remember that?
About call, text, email, and write one person every single day.
That one.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times there's different areas and different people that will give you advice of like, you should be making 400 sales calls a day. And maybe that is true for some situations, but sometimes that can be overwhelming. Like if I'm told to make 400 sales calls a day, I'm going to be paralyzed and be like, who do I start with? But if you just think, call one person, text one person, email one person, write with physically a card or a letter to one person, then it's not so overwhelming. And then at the end of the month, as Jerry mentions, you've reached out to and created a deeper relationship with 120 people.
And I liked his reflection on he's more likely to take a call from someone that has continued to nurture the relationship by continuing to reach out versus calling once every 3 years.
Yep. And here's one way to be well known in our minds, and that is to leave us a review on on our podcast. We really appreciate this. And I love this person's handle, The Great Shoe Queen.
I want to know who this is.
I know. I want to see her shoe collection. And she, I'm guessing that it's a she, left us a review on Apple Podcasts. And she gave us 5 stars, which we love and appreciate. And she said, I loved it. I really like all of your podcasts. And the podcast with the Great Girls Network and Marjorie Miller was, quote, spot on, end quote, exclamation point. I can't wait to read her books. I've been married and divorced 3 times, too, and all before 40. So go back and check out that episode with Marjorie Miller because it is really fantastic.
Yeah, that was awesome. And hey, Warners, you too, like Rachel said, you can give us a really cool review and we'll read it on the show. We'll also put it out on social media if you're okay with that. Pop over to iTunes where you can rate and review us. 5 stars is our favorite. And if you don't listen to iTunes, typically you can access it from our website, womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com, by clicking subscribe.
All right, you guys. Warners, thanks for joining us. And let's get on with this fantastic interview with Jerry Acuff.
It was funny. Yesterday, we were coming home from Easter dinner. We went up to a hotel and had Easter's. My wife and our 19-year-old son. And I forget exactly how the conversation started, but Marianne was telling Ryan, she was giving advice. She said, son, When you get a girlfriend, you have to make sure that if you really love her, you tell her that a lot, because women want to hear a lot that you love them.
Yes.
What I understood her to say was, Jerry, you're not telling me that you love me enough.
Hint, hint.
He was trying to do it through Ryan, but she's 100%. But you know, one thing that is interesting, when I ran a drug company, you know, I started as a sales rep for a pharmaceutical company. And then I woke up one day as vice president, general manager, and I actually had my staff do a study of our top performers. And what was interesting to me was women were 50% of our sales force. And this is back in the early 90s. But they were 60% of our top performers.
I'm just absorbing that those numbers.
So half the sales force were women, but 60% were of our top performers were women, which is one of the reasons why right now over probably 70% of my employees are women.
He's leading us right there. And before we continue, we should probably say, hey, Jerry, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About.
Well, thank you for having me, Tina and Rachel.
We are Thank so happy you. To have you today.
Yeah, we are. And your credentials are pretty impressive too, being named in the top 5 sales experts in the world and in the top 50 salespeople ever. That's pretty strong numbers.
I don't believe any of it.
Well, it's best for us not to believe our own praises sometimes.
No, listen, the day after they named me one of the 50 greatest salespeople of all time, I wrote a blog and said, first place, I know 50 people better than me, so I can't be in the top 50. And you know, you put that stuff on your website, but I always take it with a grain of salt. I mean, how do you quantify whether somebody's one of the top, you know, I've been one of the top 10 sales experts in the world by salesgurus.net for, I think, the last 4 years. And I know a lot about selling, but gosh, I meet a lot of people when I speak and when I do workshops. I did a workshop last week, or, you know, it was last week for Hertz. We had 100 of their top agents, and golly, were they great. And I mean, I left there with stuff that, you know, was educational to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, my old boss, guy who changed my life, guy named Don Cutcliffe, who was my regional manager, told me one time, you know, Jerry, when you're green, you're growing. When you're ripe, you're rotting. And so I just always believe that you got to keep learning. And also don't think, having been in this game a long time, that there's one, you know, great sales, you know, guru. I think, you know, I read Jeffrey Gitomer, I listen to Grant Cardone, I listen to Jill Conrath, who I dearly love. I mean, there are just so many. Linda Richardson is beyond the bomb. There's just so many people with such great ideas. And all I'm looking for almost on a daily basis is, where do I get a good idea that can help me be more successful?
Those are a lot of awesome people. Some who we've had on the show.
Have you really?
Well, Jeffrey, I've been on Jeffrey's show. We are part of the Gittimer Network for podcasts. We've got Grant Cardone's right-hand man, who we've interviewed. I think his episode will air next week or the week after.
And yeah, I think Grant's the number one sales expert in the world.
That's because he chose to be. He talks about how he chose to make himself that person. It's really interesting when people choose what they want to be and then go after that.
I'm just happy to be in the top 10. You know, that's, I don't know. I mean, I'm probably in the top 10. I know I'm in the top 10 of the oldest parents of a freshman at VMI.
Well, I did catch that you were 51 with a one-year-old when you lost your job.
Yes, in my 19th. He's 19 now, so I turned 70 last Saturday.
Wow.
You know, I mean, I don't feel, I don't know how 70 is supposed to feel. I mean, I know I look in the mirror and say, damn, that guy's old. and I know what my driver's license says, you know, and then these people say, well, you're only as old as you feel. And I say, look at your driver's license, for God's sakes. That's how old you are. So, but I mean, I have sort of a Warren Buffett mindset. I think as long as you keep learning, as long as you love what you do, you can live to be 85 or 90 and be productive.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are so many people out there like that. You know, my dad was 48 when I was born.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I love him already.
He was 48 when I was born and he was 50 when my brother was born. And he always was. I mean, if he were still with us, he'd be 99. Now you do the math and figure out how old I am. He was always in the mindset. He was always in this young mindset. And it'd be so funny when people would refer to him as my grandfather and I'd get real irritated. I'm like, that's my dad.
Well, I get irritated when people ask me, is that your grandson? And I tell people, I say, you know, I'm a big believer in the back of my business card says words matter. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, you know, one of the things I've learned from people asking me about my son is that if I see some old geezer with a young kid, I say, how is that child related to you, if at all? First place, you could be the Cub Scout master and you could be taking them to the movie. Or you could be, you know, their uncle, or you could be whatever. It's not necessary that you're their father or grandfather. And so I'm a big believer that what we say, we have to think about how does it land on the other person. And a big part of our sales training is making sure that when you ask questions or when you create openers, that you really take into consideration, how will these words make me feel? Because in selling, which is, you know, one of my areas of expertise, if that other person is not safe, then they're not going to answer truthfully. And so what we do is teach people, how do you ask questions? How do you create openers? How do you handle objections so that the person always feels A, safe, B, that you're not biased, and C, that you have an open mind. And if those three things aren't in play, then the likelihood that you're going to have a successful interaction is pretty low.
What are some examples that you could share with our listeners along those lines to create a safe feeling sales conversation?
Well, the first thing I tell our clients is it's so easy to do because it's true. Our product, this is the way I open all calls. Our product or our service is not for everybody. Now, the moment I say that, I'm saying I'm not even sure it's right for you. I teach college basketball coaches as a hobby, four of them, recruiting. And I say to them, when the athlete says, why should I come to your school? Your answer should be, I'm not sure you should.
Wow.
Now, I promise you, you'll be the only coach saying that because every other coach has got their spiel, right, ready. This is why you ought to come to Duke, or this is why you ought to come to Richmond, or this is why you ought to come to, you know, University of Virginia. But I said, what you should say is, look, I'm not sure you should. I'm not saying we don't want you. That's a separate question. What I'm saying is this the right fit for you? My bias is, And Jeffrey had a huge impact on my life. I'm sure he doesn't know it. But I was reading his book, The Little Red Book of Sales, which for me is his best book, other than The Patterson Principles. And if you haven't read The Patterson Principles, everybody should read that. It's Jeffrey's, it's brilliant work. But one of the things he said was people hate to be sold, but they love to buy. People hate to be sold. And I said, well, to myself, well, if people hate to be sold, and I'm on an airplane when I'm having this conversation with myself. If people hate to be sold and they love to buy, why do we teach people how to sell? Why don't we teach people how to buy in?
I love that.
But only buy in if it's in their best interest. So I go into meetings and say, look, I don't know whether we're right for you or not, and I won't know until I ask you some questions. I did this with a client that had a product that was struggling. And we do a lot of work with products that are struggling. And, you know, I had told the vice president of this division that they were going to struggle, and if they hired me, they wouldn't struggle, and he'd argued with me. And I said, okay, well, when you get your butt kicked, call me. And so 9 months later, he calls me and he said, okay, we're getting our butt kicked. And I said, well, what's your share? He said, 18. And I said, well, what do you think it would be? He said, 40. Now, every share point is $10 million.
Wow.
But they're $220 million behind where they really want to be, you know, in terms of their long-term projections. So he asked me to come in and talk to him. So I walked in. I got a room of 10 people there. And I don't even take a computer. I take a notepad. And I said, look, before we get started here, can I ask you some questions? And the person who was leading the meeting said, I thought we were here to see a capabilities presentation. I said, well, that's not a very good idea. And he said, why not? I said, because I don't have a clue whether I can help you or not. And until I can decide whether I can help you, and frankly, you'll decide about the same time I do. I said, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to ask you questions for about 20 minutes. At the end of that 20 minutes, you're going to come to one of two conclusions. You're either going to believe that I can help you, and I'm going to believe the same thing, and you're going to get 40 minutes of your meeting back. Or you're going to think that I can help you, and as far behind as you are in your forecast, you ain't going to want to leave. So can I ask the questions? And he said, yes. So I said, okay, tell me what you've done already. So why do you want to know that? And I said, well, what if I'm going to do the same thing? I mean, it makes no sense, does it? I mean, how can I tell you what to do if I don't know what you've done?
Yeah.
You know, they told me what they'd done. I said, well, how'd that work? Well, it didn't work at all. I said, okay, do you know why customers aren't buying from you? Yeah, we do. And I said, well, why is that? They tell me. And I said, well, I think you're wrong. And I said, well, they said, well, why that? I said, because I worked in this category for 7 years prior to today, and I know exactly why they're buying the other product. Now, I'd like to prove it first. But I asked him anyway, probably 10 questions. And at the end of the hour, I left there with a $750,000 contract. And we took their share from 18 to 52 in 9 months.
Nice work.
That's amazing.
But what we did was we and I think this is really important, we got in the mind of the customer. What was the mind of the customer? See, they didn't know what the mind of the customer was. And I don't know how much research they did, but whatever research they did, they asked the wrong questions. What happens was the customers perceived these products as the same. So they chose the other product because it was a little easier to use. So all I said was, all you have to do is could get people to understand that these products actually are similar, but they're not the same. And the real question is, what are the differences and when do they matter? And candidly, I would make the case to you that you need both of these drugs, not just one of them. Now, the question then becomes, well, which patient is in best, you know, for our product and which one's best for their product? And let's have that discussion. And that's what we did. And when you go in and say, people are beginning to see our service differently. People are beginning to see our product differently. You pique their curiosity and they're dying to know, why do people see it differently? So I'm always starting out by saying we're not for everybody, because the truth is we are not for everybody. And I don't know of any company in the world, Amazon, Google, any of the big companies, Microsoft, they don't have 100 shares. They're not for everybody either. I mean, I got an Apple. I don't have an Apple computer. My wife does. I got an Apple iPhone. So we're not for everybody. The question is, who are we for? Who are the people who would benefit from our product in a significant way that you probably ought to be thinking about? And this is what I say. I never say using our product or using our service, that you probably ought to be thinking about that maybe you're not thinking about them now. And then almost everybody will say, well, gee, who is that? And then I'll say, well, let me give you some thoughts and then tell me what you think. See, I'm a big believer that if you're trying to impact what somebody thinks and you don't know what they think, how the hell can you change what they think? So I really want to understand what you think. And to do that, I have to create a safe environment. Back years ago when I was, you know, a district manager for a pharmaceutical company, I did that job for 8 years. And then I woke up one day running the company. But I'd go into doctors and say, look, I want to do something different today. Now, if you say to anybody, I want to do something different today, 100% of the people will say, what do you want to do? I don't want to sell you anything today. I'd like to pick your brain. Is that okay? Now, how many people out of 1,000 do you think said no to that? I ask 1,000 people that question. How many said no? None. Because now they're safe. They're saying, okay, you're not going to sell me. You tell me you're not going to sell me. And all I want to do is pick your brain. Well, why do I want to pick your brain? I really want to understand how you think. Once I understand how you think, I can then get some idea of, hey, here's some ideas that maybe you haven't thought of before that you might want to think about. But I'm always using the thing I call safe, soft words. One of the things that makes people feel safe is soft words. You might want to think about this. You know, this might be something that you should consider in certain situations. The problem with most salespeople is they use absolute terms, and they inadvertently, and I would say unintentionally, they turn people off. You should. Should is a word that salespeople, you know, in my mind, should eliminate from the vocabulary. Hmm. Just like the phrase, wouldn't you agree? God, I want to puke every time I hear that one. Because nobody disagrees. And the reason they don't disagree is because they know that you obviously don't, they don't agree, but it's easier to say I do and lie than it is to have an argument with you. So what I say is, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I love that phrase.
And they'll say, well, that makes a lot of sense, but. So to me, it makes a lot of sense, but it's fundamentally no. But the good news is I'm about to find out what is the hesitation, reservation, or limitation that's actually keeping the person from thinking about it a different way.
Oh, Jerry, you're going to get me started on the whole improv concept of yes and, because that's what we train in sales, is removing the but.
Yeah, and always, you know, I learned this old phrase from a guy named Frank Betcher, who wrote a book called How I Raised Myself from Failure to Success in Selling. You know, the customer only reveals 20% of what you're thinking. So one of the things that I teach people is when somebody gives you an objection or a hesitation or reservation, you say, in addition to that, what other reasons might there be? Because what he found was that vast majority of the time, it wasn't the reason that they said that was the thing that blocked them. It was the next thing that they said.
Right. They'll usually say the easiest one first, probably. The one that feels safe. Like you said.
Jerry, I want to ask you a question about, I like what you're saying. I think this is a really good approach for our warners, for our listeners who are listening and going in that mindset. I love this mindset of, I don't know if we're right for you, and having that mindset when you walk in and asking those questions to find out if this is actually the right client for you. What can salespeople do ahead of time to do a little discovery before they go in? So from a prospecting perspective, should salespeople do a little extra work on kind of narrowing down whether or not it's a good potential client?
Well, I think that's absolutely huge, Gina. Number one, the internet makes it easy for us to do, you know, some due diligence before we actually go in and talk to these folks. The other thing that we do before, like, for example, I sent a message this morning to a very large client, top 100 client in the world, and they've already told me they're interested in us redoing their selling approach for 4,000 people. And I said, you know, they said they mentioned an overhaul. And I said, well, before I actually come down to your place, can you send me what you want me to overhaul? Now, they sent me one thing already, which I've already overhauled for them. But I want to go down there with as much insight as I possibly can. Now, you know, when I found out, you know, when I first got hired there, I went and researched all the people on LinkedIn that were a part of the key leadership team, and I found out stuff about them, and then I interviewed them on the phone. But I think you have to have some idea before you're going. In our business, you know, the pharmaceutical consulting business, and I have three or four businesses, but the pharmaceutical consulting is the main one. You know, we're looking for products that are struggling. And so if you're not struggling, then I might could still help you, but you probably don't believe that.
What a no-brainer, right? Like, that's like so common sense.
And you've got hundreds of millions of dollars invested in the brand with a huge sales force and marketing thing, then moving that share becomes really, really important. So I think doing due diligence before you go is really critical. But, you know, the other thing, sometimes I walked into the Wynn Hotel. This is interesting. You're talking about women in business. And as I've told y'all before we got started, you know, when I ran the drug company, we had 50% of our workforce were female, but 60% of our top producers were female. And so we have lots of females in our company because we're smart enough to know that they're really, really good at what they do. And a lot of these awards and stuff that I win, I only win because of these incredible people that I have working, you know, with me, because they make me so much smarter, you know, than I am. But I walk into the Wynn Hotel, I'm speaking to 1,000 people the next day, and there's this tall woman standing there, and she says, you know, she's checking me in, and she said, so, you know, what are you here for, meeting? And I said, yeah. She said, well, what kind of meeting? I told her, and she said, well, you know, what do you have to do with that company? I said, well, I'm actually the keynote speaker tomorrow to 1,000 people. Well, what do you speak on? I said, sales. She said, well, I'd like to be in sales. And I said, really? What do you want to sell? She said, well, actually, I'm selling final expense insurance. And I said, well, why are you selling that? And she said, well, because when my mother died, she left my brother and I with a bunch of final bills. And I said, I can actually believe in this stuff here. So I said, okay. And she said, I'd love to read your sales book. I said, well, here's my card. Send me an email and I'll send you a book for nothing. And then if you have any questions, call me. So she calls me on the phone a month later. I love your book, but I don't know how to apply it to what I do. And I said, well, what do they teach you? Well, it's like direct sales, and you get these leads. I guess people respond to an ad in the paper, and then they tell you to just go show up on their door and push your way in. And I said, well, how's that working for you? She said, well, it's not working at all. I said, why not? She said, it's not my personality. I said, well, it isn't mine either. In fact, I'm an introvert by nature. I got fired from my first two sales jobs because A, you know, I was in insurance and I didn't have enough friends and family. And B, I was selling Lipton tea and I thought it was manipulative. And so it wasn't me. And so I said, well, look, do me show you how to get more appointments. Yes. Said, here's what you do. I said, you got the person's name. Let's say it's Mrs. Jones. You call Mrs. Jones on the phone. You say, Mrs. Jones, I got your request for information from our company. I'm going to make the assumption that this is really, really important, your final expenses. And so what I'd like to do is I'd like to set up a meeting with you in the next couple of weeks where I could actually bring this stuff by. But I do not want you to say yes to that until I explain to you what our meeting is going to look like. Can I explain it? She'll say yes. You say, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to walk through the door. I'm going to hand you the information that you requested in the first 15 seconds. And then I'm going to ask you three questions. And at the end of those three questions, you're either going to ask me to sit down and explain this stuff to you, or I'm going to leave. So can we do that? And I said, you think you're going to get more appointments? You're going to get a lot more appointments. And she said, okay, well, what are the three questions? I said, okay, first question is, Mrs. Jones, there's no right or wrong answer to this question. Say, I'm trying to make her feel safe, right? But if I ask you this question, I have a lot of money saved for my final expenses. I have a little money saved, or I have no money saved. Which of those three would it be? Now, if she says I got a lot of money saved for final expenses, you're in the wrong room. Right? And that's unlikely that that's what she's going to say. She's either going to say, you know, the other two. And if she says the other two, then what you say is the truth. The truth is, that's exactly the situation that my mom was in. And it's why I'm so passionate about this business. Let me ask you the second question. The second question is, if you don't have much money saved, who exactly will this financial burden fall to? And I want a name. Jessica, my daughter, you know, my brother, Tony. I don't give a damn who it is. And then once you get the name, say, okay, let me ask you the third question. When you pass, and obviously these folks will be, they'll be mourning, you know, because no matter when it happens, I mean, that's a horrible thing to lose a loved one. But how problematic will this financial burden be to them? And if the answer is it's really problematic, then we ought to sit down and talk about this. If they say, well, Tony's worth $20 million, then you're in the wrong room. So my point is, she's prospecting before she ever gets into the sales call. Does that make sense?
Totally.
And what happens is the person is buying in because they see they have a need. And the thing that I loved about why this woman, her name is Shannon, why she was selling this stuff was because she personally was so passionate about it. And I think if you're going to be successful at anything, you know, Zig Ziglar used to say, selling is a transference of feeling, and you can't transfer a feeling you don't have. Well, she had the feeling. So, you know, you got to find out whether this person is a legitimate prospect or not, and whether you can do that beforehand or when you get to that meeting. The real question is this: is my product or service a really good fit for this person? If it is, you should move heaven and earth to get them to give it a fair trial. If it isn't, you ought to get the hell out of there.
Well, that leads me to another question, and I think Rachel may have one as well. I have a hot button right now, which is people on LinkedIn who are trolling by sending you messages as soon as they connect with you, and then go into, I have this $20 million opportunity for you. And I like let a lady have it again yesterday. This is my ongoing topic. She wanted to know if I wanted to be in the hemp industry. And I said, maybe you should look a little closer at my profile before you make this assumption. Do you have any advice for people who that's the approach they're using? They're doing nothing to learn about you, and then they're hitting you from a social media perspective, thinking they're going to sell something to you.
Well, you know, I don't. The only advice I have for them is stop, because you're not selling anything. I mean, I get these emails all the time. You know, I got one today. I mean, a call. You know, hey, I've got this thing called 10K Builder. If you want to make, I'm making $100,000 a month. And I'm like, you know, I first place, I don't have any interest in that. I got four businesses, but it's a waste of my time. So I don't, you know, first place, I don't accept phone calls from people on my cell phone unless their name comes up. If their name doesn't come up, I don't take the call. And if they leave me a message, then I will. Now, again, let me give you another example, though, where this actually did work. I got a message, this is probably 5 months ago, from a woman I'd never met. And she tells me that, you know, I've researched the pharmaceutical industry, and it is clear that you are the guru of pharmaceuticals. And I would love the opportunity to just chat with you and see if you could help me get a job in the pharmaceutical business. I've been in the medical device business for 6 years, but my company just shut down, and I would really like your help. And I'm saying to myself, okay, now here's someone who actually researched me, yeah, right? Came to this conclusion, and I'd be happy to talk to her. So I sent her a message, and I said, I'd love to talk to you. Just give me a call. And I put my cell phone number on the LinkedIn. And, you know, as it turns out, this is one of the most remarkable people I ever met in my life. She was Miss Iowa in 2008. She's the first disabled woman to ever win any beauty contest, and she has cerebral palsy, but her cerebral palsy basically only affects her legs. But she's wildly successful in sales, and so I actually had gotten a chance to meet her and know her, and we now have a relationship. But the thing that makes her different from those other people is that she actually took the time to, you know, to learn something about me to make me want a relationship with her. I mean, if I've learned anything about social media, people don't connect with you unless they think that it makes sense for them. And they need a relationship with you. Now, if you look at, you know, Ted McGrath, McGrath builds a relationship with you because he's got this great video for 15 minutes, and then he sells you two products, one for 37, one for 97. You get the two products. They are absolutely fantastic. And then the next thing you know, he's trying to sell you, you know, more consulting. But you've already built a relationship with him because his stuff is so damn good. Yeah. Cardone, on the other hand, Cardone's strategy is be ubiquitous, be everywhere, all the time. And then deliver great value. Well, it's hard not to build a relationship with somebody like that. You know, Russ Ruffino does it a completely different way. Ruffino does 45-minute hour webinars. So if you stay and listen to his webinars, by the time you've spent an hour with him, you feel connected to him. So my whole thing is, and I've written three books on this, you know, The Relationship Edge in Business, and then two other versions of it. My thing is, people connect with you if they feel like they have a relationship with you. If I don't feel like I have a relationship with you, then I'm not interested in anything you have to say. But you could convince me to have a relationship with you. Now, I would try that first rather than, hey, would you like this opportunity? Because you're going to be stupid if you don't take it.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually said this to the woman. I use this phrase all the time. I'm like, you know, I'm not going to have sex with you till you take me to dinner. I mean, we haven't gotten to know each other. I'm like, and I finally, I was aggravated. I gave her coaching advice and said, here's a couple of different approaches you could have taken with me.
Yeah, but these people don't listen. They believe in what I call the law of large numbers. So if you send out 10,000 of these things and you get three hits, then that's successful. And, you know, you and I or Rachel happen to be one of those, you know, 9,997 who say this is the dumbest. The other thing I want to say to some of these people, especially the ones who put it on email, is who the hell writes your email? You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Now, you know, my business is really about teaching people what to say, but good gosh, some of these things are so awful. And I'm like, I mean, you can't correct them all because you'd spend all your time correcting idiots. But it's just a very bad idea. Now, can you build a relationship with me on LinkedIn? Now, here's a very interesting thing. One of the things that I realized a while back, one of my very close friends is a guy named Buzz Williams. And Buzz is the new head basketball coach at Texas A&M. And I have been working with him, friends with him for 10 years. When he was at Marquette, was at Virginia Tech, and I'm assuming I'll be going to College Station. But Buzz writes one person, calls one person, texts one person, and emails one person every single day. And so he's staying in touch with 120 people every single month. And when I asked him how he did it, and this was 10 years ago, he showed me a piece of paper, and it had 120 names on it. And then every day he had this little calendar that says CTEW, call, text, email, and write. And so he just got this process for doing it. Well, I took that idea and actually created an app called Really Linked. Now, I'll check this morning. I have 9,283 connections on LinkedIn. And if you ask me how many of those 9,283 are crucial to my success, I didn't say important to my success because every one of them is important, but crucial to my success, the answer would be 80. So then the question becomes, how do you maintain a relationship with somebody? Well, I write in my book, well, if you got to maintain a relationship with somebody, you have to stay in touch with them. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to call them, you know, once a month. That doesn't mean you have to go see them once a month, but you ought to make sure that they don't forget that you exist. So I created this app called Really Linked. And basically what it does, and it's in the Google, we haven't officially launched it yet, but it basically allows you to call, text, email, or request a meeting with somebody that's in your app. Now, how do you get them in your app? They're in your phone. My assumption is those 80 people that are crucial to my success are in my phone. I simply download them into the app, and then I say to myself, do I want to contact them once a week, once every other week, once a month, or do I want to set a specific time? Like I want to call Rachel next Friday at 4:00. I can do that. And then it'll come up on the Really Linked icon every day. Like today I did six messages. you know, one was to my wife.
Well, you got to get her to buy in.
Well, she's on there every day, but I mean, usually I'm just, one of the reasons I have her on there every day is so that I can actually demonstrate. So like today when I send her a text, because what happens is once I send her a text or an email or a phone call, it actually keeps a record of it. So my whole thing is knowing when was the last time I contacted you. So on the text, I'm actually able to go into the contact history. And what I did today was in the contact history, I put ask about Ryan's appointment. So I can actually go back and say, the last time I text you, why did I text you? I can do that. Now, the contact history basically tells you when did you actually contact them if they're a part of your reminder. And then there's a whole, so basically it's a CRM light for free.
How do you spell it, and when is it coming out?
It's really R-E-A-L-L-Y. Like, who do you really want to be linked
to? Okay.
Really linked. And I trademarked it, and I've been working on it for 5 years, and it should be out. You know, I'm going to do a soft launch here probably in a couple of weeks. But, I mean, if you go to the Apple Store or you go to the Google Play Store and type in really linked, you can download it. The only thing that I caution people is if I have, you know, Gina Tremarco in my address book three times, you got to pick which one of those three you want. The best thing to do is to link those contacts together and then just put that one person in there, because I can put somebody in there, you know, I've got twice in there. And if I got their email on one thing and I get their phone on the other, I want to get it all, you know, in one contact. Now, the other thing that the app enables you to do, let's say I add Gina Tremarco. Then at the bottom of your profile on my app, I can click a link and it will take me to your LinkedIn page. If you and I are LinkedIn together, it'll immediately take me to your LinkedIn page. So if I want to see what's going on in your life before I contact you, I can do that. There's also a link that takes you to Google where your name is already in the Google search page, and I can Google you straight from my app.
Well, when it is official, let us know, and we'll push that out to our listeners so that they can download it for themselves, because I think that's a really cool app.
But my point is, you know, relationships to me, Buzz asked me one time, I don't know, about 4 years ago, he said, send me a list of everything. Or no, he said, I want to have a conversation with you. We spend a day together every summer. He said, I want to have a conversation with you about what you wish you knew when you were 42. Because he was 42 at the time. And it took me about 6 weeks to put this list together. I had 24 things. But the first thing on the list is relationships are everything. Now, I used to think relationships are important. I now believe that they're everything, because the truth is the quality of your life, professionally and personally, is directly related to the quality of the relationships you have with other people. And so if I really want a relationship with somebody, I don't want to be out of touch with them. And here's why. The statistics show that you lose somewhere between 1 and 10% of your influence every 30 days that you're not in touch with somebody. And I don't know about you, but I get calls all the time from people that I haven't heard from in 5 years, and they want me to help them. Mm-hmm. Now, my appetite for helping somebody who hasn't reached out to me in 5 years is fundamentally zero. My appetite for helping people who have stayed in touch with me, because, by the way, this is in my book, is I do almost anything to help them. So I think what people have to understand is, you know, your network is really, really important in making sure that you're proactively managing that network so that people know you exist. I mean, I sent a guy a message today that I'm not expecting anything from him, but I just said, hey, where are your ears burning? Last week I saw JD, and JD and I were talking about you. And then we traded 3 or 4 text messages together. Now, I'll send him another message in a month. But what I know is this. If I do this consistently, ultimately I'm going to get business that I wouldn't have gotten before, because people are going to say, hey, you know, I was thinking about you, and I need to talk to you about a project.
So much good stuff. I want to go back really quickly to what you were saying about asking questions and kind of figuring out if the prospect is right for you in business. And I think people get caught up in, especially people that need the business, you know, and I talk to a lot of brand new agents in real estate, which is what I do in sales. and they're just so desperate for the next sale that they don't take that into consideration, how important it is to decide, is this customer really right for me? And I think that's such a great point of asking those correct questions so that you're not wasting your time or the other person's time, you know, of just wanting so desperately to get the contract and get the sale.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I say in my book, Stop Acting Like a Seller, Start Thinking About Like a Buyer, is the less you care about the sale, the more you sell.
Yes.
What you care about is being good at your job. I tell you, I've mentored a young kid here at my college for a couple of years, and he was a great football player. And I got a letter one day, an email one day from his mom telling me that that I had changed her life. And I'm trying to say, well, I've only met this woman once for like 30 seconds. But she said that basically everything that I had taught her son, I had taught her. Then she goes on to tell me that she had her son when she was 14. And she made the decision to raise him. And she raised this phenomenal human being. So anyway, she told me that she was making a change. She was going from one career to real estate. So I said, well, look, I want to help you be successful in real estate. I'm going to give you for free my virtual training about selling. And it has goal setting, relationship building, and how do you, it's called Superstar Sales Academy. And I said, I want you to go through this. It's ordinarily, I don't know, $1,000 or so, but I'm going to give it to you for nothing. But I want you to go through it. And I want to be your personal mentor. And in I had lunch with her 3 weeks ago. And in the first, 8 months that she was in the business, she was a $1 million producer.
Wow.
And I asked her, I said, well, how much did this, you know, my stuff help you? She said, well, it was invaluable, but you taught me that, you know, not everybody is a perfect client for me. Not every house is perfect for somebody else. But the other thing that I find about real now, I just sold a house, by the way, and I have more homes than I need. So I sold one of them, and I was amazed at, I don't know, for the lack of salespersonship, this person had tremendous reputation. And so she calls my wife and she says, well, you know, the people that they don't like the thing, the constant feedback we get about your house is that there are no views from the master bedroom. And I said, okay, well, first place, you should never get that objection. She said, well, why not? I said, well, first place, what you should ask the person on the way over there, or number one, how important are views to you? Well, they're very important. Okay, second question, how much time do you spend during the day in the master bedroom? And the answer is not much. And then you say you're going to love this house because there are no views from the master bedroom. All the views are in the kitchen. They're in the den. They're in the family room. They're in the playroom downstairs. So you're going to love this house.
Oh, nice.
But I'm like, how can you not know that? And then the other thing is, you know, people didn't like it because it was in a small cul-de-sac. And I said, well, you should ask people before you come over there. In your mind's eye, do you want a house where there's somebody next to you, somebody across the street from you, and some right behind you, or would you prefer someplace more private? Anybody that says they want the first thing, you should never show them my house. And so, you know, I just think that people really have to start thinking about, you know, what is the buyer looking for? I'm a big believer that if I don't know what the buyer's thinking, if I don't know what the potential buyer is really, really looking for, and I think most people stop 1, 2, 3, 4 questions short of really understanding what the person's want because they're in such a frenzy to make a sale that they wind up losing sales that they would have gotten otherwise.
Right. And people can feel that right away. They can feel it if you're interested in helping them find what they really want, or if you're interested in selling them something because you need to sell something. Like it's so transparent in real estate agents, as well as like car salesmen, you know, those classic sleazy sales jobs that realtors sometimes fall into, because there's a lot of let's call it realtors that could use some more training like you're offering.
Training to another realtor, and she'd been in the business 8 years. And the one thing she told me, she said, this is the training every broker that I worked for promised me and never gave me. And awesome. You know, I don't think I got the keys to the kingdom here, but I do know that if you, what you ought to ask, and this to me is a very simple concept, is what is it you really need to know? And most people don't even think about it. What do you really need to know? Do you, I mean, and there's lots of things that you need to know if you're talking about a house. I mean, I'll give you another example. When my wife and I bought our home in Scottsdale, I had told the Century 21 agent, and I use Century 21, and it's only because at the time they were, you know, one of the biggest, and I just said, give me your best agent. They gave me two wonderful people, and I said, okay, here's what I want. And so they took me, to my wife and I, to 19 houses, and we didn't like any of them. And so right at the end of the day, here's one of the things they said. Now, look, about 10 miles north of here is a completely different look and feel, but there's some homes I think you might like up there. Now, I wish they'd asked me before they'd ever shown me that, because if they had said, look, you've said that you want to be within 30 minutes of downtown. Would you be open if we found some really nice places that were 45 minutes from downtown? And I would have said yes. And I wouldn't have wasted a whole day seeing houses that I ain't going to buy. And I wound up going up there. And in the moment we drove down Happy Valley Road in Scottsdale, we said to ourselves, my God, this is it. This is exactly where we want to live. And the distance became completely irrelevant. And so I think it's really probing to find out what are the outer limits. But people don't do that because they're in such a hurry to make a sale.
Yeah, and I've definitely, as much as I love learning, I love sales training, I love just getting everything that I possibly can. And all of it points to slow down, nurture the relationship, ask the right questions, and listen. And I think a lot of people miss that because there's, like you said, they're such in a rush.
Well, the other thing about the relationship that's so important is that if I have a relationship with you, then I want to, then I'll listen to whatever you say. If I don't have a relationship with you, I may or may not listen to what you have to say.
Right.
But if I built a relationship with you, like my financial planner, you know, my financial planner I've had 19 years, and I met him at a football game. And he asked me, you know, after maybe we went to 4 or 5 games, he said, hey, let's get together for lunch. We're both from Virginia. So I get together and I said, what do you do? He told me financial planning. And he said, he asked me this question. How much do you like your financial planner? He didn't say, do you have one? How much do you like him? I said, I don't like him at all. He said, why? And I said, I don't know. I just don't like him. I don't connect with him. He said, well, is he any good? And I said, how do I know? I don't know a good one from a bad one. And he said, well, if you ever want me to look at your stuff, I'll be happy to look at it, and I'll tell you whether he's any good or not. And I said, well, I'd really like that. So he comes to the house, and he looks at our stuff. Now, what am I expecting him to say? I'm expecting him to trash the guy because I've already trashed him. And he comes back and here's what he says to me. He said, let me tell you something. You may not like this guy, but he's really good. He said, and honestly, there's only one thing that he has not done that I would do, and it's very, very small. And I said, well, what is it? So he tells me it's transferring a medical spending account of my wife's into an IRA. And he said, just call your guy and ask him to do that. And I said, no, you're going to do that. And he said, no, I don't need to do that. Your guy can do that. Your guy's good. And I said, well, my guy may be good, but I don't want him anymore. I want you. And I've had this guy for 19 years. Why did I do that? Because of his integrity. And I can tell you, he's one of my best friends in the world now after 19 years. And he has exactly the same integrity today that he did back then. He's wildly successful, and he's not trying to sell you anything. He's trying to make sure that you are making the right decisions, and he's as honest as he can possibly be. And I love him to pieces, but he won my business because of his integrity.
Hey, we have one important question we want to get to before we run out of time. And that is going back to you mentioning that women were in the top percentage of top salespeople in your company. So what is your overall perspective of women in sales, and what are the strengths and weaknesses that you see in women in sales, and what are the traits of the best saleswomen you've encountered?
Well, probably the best saleswoman I've ever encountered is the one I'm married to.
Good answer.
I'm serious. And I tell people, you know, I'm one of the top 10 sales experts in the world, but if somebody met Marianne, they would probably throw me out. she is phenomenal. But, you know, look, this is my experience having hired a lot of women over the last 38 years. Number one, they are genuinely interested in the other person far more than men are, in my experience. Number two, they are unbelievable listeners, way better listeners than men. Number three, I think they have a desire to succeed and to prove themselves that is stronger than most men. Not all men, because you have a lot of high-producing men as well. I think they're unbelievable at building relationships. I mean, my wife, you know, she owns a jazzercise studio because since our son was born, she's devoted her life to being, you know, the vice president treasurer of our company and a full-time mom. But she also now, over the last 7 years, her seven-year anniversary for teaching jazzercise was Sunday. And she has her own jazzercise studio. So we go yesterday, we live 30 miles from where her jazzercise studio is. We go to this hotel in this little town where her studio is, which is 30, 40,000 people. And she can't even get to the table because she's talking to so many people that she knows. And she's pointing, I know this one and this one and this one. And she's introducing me to all these people. They're great at building relationships, and they're building meaningful relationships, not superficial relationships. And so I also think that their work ethic is, I don't know, I've never found, you know, one that I hired that worked for me or, you know, my wife that didn't have ridiculous work ethic. You know, my wife in my mind works too hard. She probably say the same thing about me, but I just think that they're more engineered for being in the business of being persuasive and effective at communicating than men are. And they're smarter. I mean, as I was telling you earlier, you know, I learned the concept of premium pricing from my wife. You know, when I started this business 18 years ago, the delta point was me and Mary Ann. And, you know, Mary Ann, we had a one-year-old. And she was doing our proposals and she was doing our PowerPoint presentations. And I was out doing the, you know, customer facing stuff, and she was doing everything on the back end. So I had this project that I sold for $75,000. And the next project that came in a month later was exactly the same thing. And she says, "Why'd you charge $75 for the last one?" I said, "Well, I want to make $5,000 a day. And it was in fact 15 days worth of work." She said, "Why don't you charge $90? And I said, "Oh, well, I don't think the customer will pay $90. She said, "Well, we can just charge $90 and see. And they don't, we'll go back to $75. So the customer didn't say anything. Then a month later, another project comes in. She says, "Hey, let's try $120. And I'm like, "All right. I mean, what do you got to lose? You can always go back to $90, right? And then the next one comes in, it's $150. She said, "Let's try $150. So we do $150. And what I realized was that I was focused on my perception of the price. What she was focused on is look at the value you are creating for your clients. In their mind, the difference between $75 and $150 is zero if you can deliver the results that you have delivered for all of these other clients. And so, you know, I would not have a successful business today if it weren't A, for my wife's brilliance about premium pricing, but more importantly than that, you know, her being sort of the rock of our foundation, you know, at home and being supportive of me and everything I do. And now that don't get me wrong, there's times when she tells me the stuff I'm doing is stupid. And I have a tendency to disagree with her about half the time, though ordinarily she proves to be right. But I just think that my experience tells me that women are great at connecting with people. And I think if you can connect with people and you sincerely believe in what you're selling, then you can be wildly successful. So many men are not great at connecting, and they really don't believe in what they're selling because they haven't put that much thought into it.
Yeah. Awesome, awesome advice and content from you today, Jerry. I'm like, God, there's so many nuggets I have. What about you, Rachel?
Totally. So much. We could probably go on for another couple hours. Alas.
I know. Too bad people don't have a long enough attention span for us to go on for hours. I want to give a special shout out to Casey Hasten, who introduced us to Jerry. So special shout out to her, because this has just been amazing, Jerry.
Well, let me tell you something. Casey is amazing.
She is.
And if you know Casey, you know she's exactly the personification of everything I just said about a woman in sales. She is all of that. She and all that in a bag of chips.
And she's adorable.
She's adorable.
That helps.
Such a magnetic personality with such a pure heart. And, you know, the second chapter in my book, Stop Acting Like a Seller, is intent is everything. And when you have pure intent, when your intent is to help the customer get what they want or need, and you don't care whether it's your product or not, you're going to be wildly successful. And she is that person.
She really is. And she's going to love having us talk about her.
She's one of my favorite people, and I was lucky to meet her.
Well, once again, Jerry, thank you so much for being on Women Your Mother Warned You About today. We hope that this is the beginning of a brand new relationship with you.
Well, if I can be of any help at any other time, let me know. And if people want to know more about, you know, my stuff, just go to www.jerryacuff.com. The one thing that is on there, which I hope everybody will take advantage of, I have a 22-minute program on how do you set and achieve stretch goals. And it's how I've made a 7-figure income for 16 consecutive years.
Oh, cool.
And I read this book 92 times called Psycho Cybernetics, and I synthesized all the most important points into 5 rules for setting and achieving stretch goals. That is free.
Great.
On my jerryacuff.com website. Now, here's what I tell people. Don't download it if you're not going to watch it 5 times. If you watch it 5 times, it'll change your life. If you watch it once, you'll say, not that big a deal.
Okay. Awesome. And we'll put all that information in our show notes, how to reach out to you and how to get that download and how to connect with you.
Well, thank you very much, Gina. Rachel, great to meet you. And I hope at some point in time when you run out of really, really, really important people, you'll call me again.
Oh, we will definitely call you again. We're going to have a part 2 and 3, don't you think, Rachel?
I think so, because I know we had a lot of other questions that we wanted to ask, but we just, I was actually more quiet than normal because I was just listening to all of this great knowledge, and I probably will go back and listen to it again. I love to listen to our podcast so that I can catch all the stuff that I missed the first time around. As you mentioned, Jerry, you got to listen to things over and over if you want it to stick.
Yeah, repetition is the mother of learning. So thank you all so much for having me. It's an honor for me to be here, and I look forward to the next session.
I didn't want to interrupt. There was so much great stuff going on.
I know. Couldn't get a word in edgewise, but it was good. Like, you didn't want to get a word. Like, I was the same as you. I was like taking notes, and I'm like, oh, we should ask another question.
Right? Well, sometimes it's like that. So, you know, it's all good. He was fantastic.
Another awesome interview, another great expert. Thank you to all of our Warners for listening to this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. Remember, if you want to learn more about Jerry, you can go to his website. We'll put all that information in the show notes for you. And to connect with us, go to womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com, where you can also get some free downloads from us. And to connect with myself, Pivot 10 Results, or Carolina Improv, you can go over to ginatremarco.com.
And to connect with me, Rachel Pitts, formerly Rachel Tipton, don't be confused. You can find me all over social media as Rachel on Real Estate, or go grab your free How to Buy a Home guide at theclosingcurve.com.
Awesome. And as we mentioned earlier, please give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and wherever you get your podcasts. And Warners, remember, for the best relationships, keep it real, raw, and relevant.
And a little irreverence doesn't hurt either.
Bye, Rach.
Bye, Gina. Bye, Warners.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.